From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast, is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI.
Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
From UFOs to psychic powers and government conspiracies, history is riddled with unexplained events. You can turn back now or learn the stuff they don't want you to know. A production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, welcome back to the show. My name is Matt.
My name is Noel.
They call me Ben. We're joined, as always, with our super producer, Alexis, codenamed Doc Holliday Jackson. Most importantly, you are you. You are here. That makes this the stuff they don't want you to know. And fellow conspiracy realist, we, your faithful correspondents, are returning to you from some time on the road. As we were pursuing the Hoover Dam, the intricacies of casinos and other things. A lot of other strange events occurred. It's not just you folks. It's not just us. Many extraordinary events are in play. You may have heard some scuttlebutt recently about multiple children going missing in Ohio, particularly in the Cleveland area. Turns out that might be a little bit of sensationalism. You may have heard about an artist who got a little big for their britches over in Denmark. And that part is true. You may have heard about a massive raid on an occult terrorist sect also in Europe. That part is also true. But one thing that you need to know immediately, if you are in the United States, is about the Gulf Coast. And perhaps that's where we start with one of our absolute favorite cities.
Yes, Nolens or New Orleans.
Nola.
Yes. But really, we're starting with water. You like water, right? We talk about this on the show quite often. Water's pretty good. It does a lot of things. Yeah, it's mid. It does a lot of things. It's in the things you like to drink, usually, no matter what it is that you're drinking. It sustains you. It is most of you. It makes the things grow that you eat. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's pretty good. Water, actually, you know what? I think water might be tops, Ben.
It's the number one. Thank you, Matt. Nice dunk on that alley-oop. Yes, sir. Water is by far the primary thing the human organism needs to survive. You can go about 2 weeks, if you're human, without ingesting solid food. Your timeline for existing without water is much abbreviated. It's a huge thing. I was looking at on Instagram, you guys may have seen it. I was looking at this map of where to move in a 100 or 50 to 80 to 100 year timeline.
And the Great Lakes region is probably one of the best here in the U.S. simply because of that massive amount of potable water.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I just came around to regular water recently. I didn't know. It's so good.
It's
it makes
so
you feel good.
It's yeah,
refreshing.
It's very good.
You know, a little ice. Add a little ice. It's a game changer, fellas.
Now, dang. Some cultures say that if you add ice to the water, if you drink cold water, it will create stomach cancer. That is scientifically untrue. No offense to ancient Chinese medicine. However, if you have the ability, start the day with a nice glass of water. And to Noel's point, the ice is just chef kiss.
You know, I did hear, though, that for exercising, room temperature water is better. Because I think ice cold water can, like, dry you out or something. Or at least that's what my exercise buddy told me.
Too bad. I'm still taking the ice. All right. So, guys, water's great. We're talking about a lot. Fresh water in particular, water that is not from a sea or ocean that is salinated and has a whole bunch of sodium incorporated in with that oxygen and hydrogen. Because the fresh water is the stuff we can drink, as we called it potable there earlier.
Yeah.
So in rivers that flow through the United States and every country, but we're going to talk about the U.S. ones, particularly the Mississippi River, the big old river that kind of divides the country. You'll often hear, maybe if you don't live in the United States, the terms east of the Mississippi or west of the Mississippi. That is because this is a huge river that pretty much runs the entirety of the contiguous United States.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a lot of volume of water within this river that flows. And that's a great thing because that water not only historically provided transportation to the cities that grew along that whole corridor there, but it also provides drinking water, fresh drinking water that gets, I guess we would call it processed at water processing plants all throughout that area. And it can get, you know, piped out essentially pretty far to other parts of the U.S. and to cities and small towns and things like that. But in every instance, you still have to clean that water. It's not like it's completely fresh, right? There's going to be microorganisms, pollutants, things that have to come out of there.
Sure.
So that's a huge volume of water flowing through the not the center of the country, oh, kind of over to the east, but flowing through the country. And what it does, it's fascinating, guys. As it's providing all that stuff that we need, it goes all the way down to the Gulf of Mexico, right? And that is where the water kind of flows out into the ocean. There's a problem right now, though, a really, really big problem. There's not enough water flowing through that part of the river right at the end as it enters into the Gulf. And the salt water, if you imagine an invisible barrier, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you've ever put oil and water into a container and you can see the two different liquids there, and the oil sits on top of the water. Imagine that, but with salt water and fresh water, except instead of it being horizontally, like laying on top of each other vertically, it is horizontal, right? Fresh water is coming in. Let's just imagine from your left-hand side, salt water is coming in from your right-hand side. Now, if there's enough fresh water pushing against that salt water, then you've got kind of an equilibrium, right? And not a ton of the fresh water spills out and makes an impact on the ocean. Not a lot of salt water pushes in towards the river and has an impact on the river. But because there's not enough water, basically pressure pushing up against the salt water side, the salt water is doing this crazy thing where in a wedge form, it is pushing itself underneath the fresh water into the river itself and moving upstream.
Mm.
And you may think, oh, well, that's not that big of a deal, right? But
That's not that big of a deal, right?
But Ben, Noel, what are some problems that could occur if salt water is going underneath and flowing up the river?
Saltwater intrusion, perhaps?
Exactly.
Contaminating freshwater supplies, like I think what happened, and we actually learned about this from our tour guide at the Hoover Dam, this thing called the Salton Sea in California that was basically contaminated by saltwater that caused it to kill, like there was a giant fish kill, messed up the whole ecosystem there in this town that then became kind of a weird, creepy ghost town.
Mm-hmm. Now imagine this water, that same problem, right? Because it is affecting things, freshwater creatures that live on the bottom of that riverbed, right? And there are a lot of those. They can't survive in the salt water, so they probably die. Also, if you get enough of it and it pushes far enough into the river, the salt water starts going into the intakes that feed water processing plants, the stuff that makes potable water for you to drink from a tap.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Those processing plants can't process salt water. It doesn't work.
Right, because then they would be desalination plants.
Exactly. It would be a whole different facility that you would have to build to process that water.
Which are very expensive. I think prohibitively expensive in some cases. People are always asking, like, why can't we make drinking water out of the ocean? Because to do it at scale, I think, is incredibly complex and expensive.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. You have to come up with a plan. How does the investment into building this plant actually get, does it pay for itself? Is it through taxes over time? How do you do this whole thing? Mm-hmm. Every time I think about that, I think about the toll roads on Highway 400 here in Atlanta, because there had to be a way for it to pay, the highway to pay for itself, and it was through a toll.
Well, that's a success story, though.
That is a success story. In this case, though, we're talking about imminent salt water that is currently, right now as we're recording, it is moving up the Mississippi River. It has already affected several places that are several places in Louisiana that are immediately on where the river meets the ocean, basically, to where they cannot use any of the water coming out of their taps for anything. What several parishes in the area have had to do is just drink bottled water. And we are talking already now for weeks and weeks that they've been having to do that.
And for anybody outside of Louisiana, a parish is a county.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I should have mentioned that. let me just read a bit from this Time article from September 24th, 2023. It is titled, What to Know About the Saltwater Threat to Louisiana's Drinking Water Supply. You can find it right now. Here is a quote. New Orleans Mayor LaToya Cantrell signed an emergency declaration for the city of New Orleans. Now, why? Because New Orleans isn't that far away from the parishes that are already being affected here. And we're talking about some smaller parishes, not that they are not important, right? There are human beings there that are being affected by this. Every one of them is important. But if a city like New Orleans, their water supply gets affected, you're talking about 800,000 people or more. So just continuing here. That is an emergency declaration for New Orleans, as well as for other areas of the state, including the Plaquemines Parish, which is one of the first ones to be affected, as well as Empire Bridge in the southeast. Those are the places that are currently under that drinking water advisory that says don't drink your water. Instead, take the bottled water. Authorities are attempting to make fixes here. Guys, when we were at the Hoover Dam recently, we learned about a new governmental department that I was unaware of. What's it called? Bureau of Reclamation.
Mm-hmm. It only matters if you are on the western side
of
the Mississippi.
Exactly, Ben. This is so cool how they kind of came together here. But if you're on the western side, it's Department of Reclamation. At least to my understanding, and maybe this is wrong, on the eastern side, my understanding is the Army Corps of Engineers. Maybe there's like some cross-pollination going on there that I'm just unaware of. Mm. But the Army Corps of Engineers and other city officials and other crews are out there attempting to fix things here. But how do you fix a ton of salt water creeping underneath a riverbed like that?
It's a good question. It's a question the Middle East quarrels with as well.
Yes. One of the solutions, guys, is to build something. It's kind of like a levee. It's not exactly the same thing as a levee. I think it's called a sill, but something that would be a physical barrier that's placed on the seabed itself to prevent that seawater, that salt water, from being able to move forward. Basically, almost like a mid-water dam, It's kind of a strange concept, but it works if you think about, again, those two layers, right?
Mm-hmm.
And as that salt water is underneath the freshwater pushing in, if it's got a barrier there at the bottom, it just can't move any further, except it currently is moving further than the sills that have been put in place.
Question.
Yeah.
Not a hydrologist. Is salt water, is brine or whatever, is it more dense than fresh water? Is that the way that the salt, is that the result of this horizontal, or the origin point of this horizontal barrier? Like if you are walking by the Mississippi today, mm-hmm. and you for some reason just take a palm full of water from the shore and drink it because you like playing the dice or mm-hmm. whatever, then would it taste of salt? Like is salt water heavier? Is that why it's at the bottom?
That, you know what? Oh gosh, I feel terrible saying this. I do not know.
I think it is because it displaces. I mean, you're more likely to float in salt water, so right. there's like a displacement quality that, yeah. to it.
So mm-hmm. that there you go. That must be it. And I'm sorry for just not knowing that, guys. But my understanding of the reason why it creates that wedge underneath is because of the water is moving down the river, right, towards the ocean, mm-hmm. and it spills basically over on top of and over the ocean water that is coming in. Which is weird to me because I would imagine there's tremendous pressure from the ocean pushing the water in, mm-hmm. but then there's also tremendous pressure pushing the water out from the river. And not as a non-hydrologist, I don't fully understand the science there, but the big thing is volume of water from the river is not enough because there have been drought conditions all along this area. If there is not, I think the statement from, gosh, I think this was from WDSU. It's an NBC local channel there. It was a story about the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in constructing that sill. They mm-hmm. were talking about they needed an estimated 10 inches of water in total in the immediate area to get enough volume of water pushing down the river to stop the saltwater intrusion, to stop basically water supplies from being cut off in New Orleans and then moving further up.
So what of the people, the city of New Orleans, what does this mean for them, Matt?
It means don't panic, but maybe buy some of those water filters that we just talked about with the casual preppers guys. Mm. Sorry, if you don't know that, Ben and I were recently on an episode of the Casual Preppers podcast, and they put us on to a specific water filtration system, something mini that I can't quite recall. They said it was similar to the Life Straw, but it had the filter lasted a lot longer. Literally, that's something you could do, like just in case if you wanted.
And also on the note of casual preppers, to our buddies out there, Noel, you're very much missed.
Mm-hmm.
Shouted you out. Do check out the episode. This is a good way to tease it. Do check out the episode in which we talk turkey about best water filters. Life Straw is a little bit overpriced.
I missed you guys too. I was on a little family trip, but sounds like an awesome conversation. And I don't know why I don't own one of these things yet. We're going to be drinking out of puddles before you know it. You know, it's coming.
Oh yeah.
It's the Sawyer, I think.
That's it. That was it.
That's the model? Or that's
Sawyer
like
Mini.
Okay, the Sawyer Mini is the best one in terms of affordability. Anyway, Matt,
What are we talking, by the way? Like hundreds or
less? No.
Like $20. Like $50? $20. Okay.
$20 US.
Everyone should have one.
Matt, I didn't want to derail us there. But check out the episode, as you were saying, or the interview with those guys. Hopefully they can come on our show later and we'll all get to meet them here.
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, but here is the thing to keep in mind, according to the Army Corps of Engineers. Do not panic about this. Be careful of where you're getting information from, because the Army Corps of Engineers dealt with this exact thing in 1998 mm-hmm. because there were crazy drought conditions. Saltwater intruded. They dealt with it. They put the sills in. They've learned a lot of lessons already since then on how to combat this thing. But doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. Doesn't mean there's not going to be major problems. But I guess just follow closely what's being said. The weather forecasts as of right now are not calling for a bunch of rain that's going to mitigate this problem in the near term. But
and they need 10 inches of rain.
Yes, 10 inches, which is a lot. I guess we'll just kind of have to wait and see. Just be, you know, I guess just be aware if you're living in New Orleans or any of the surrounding areas.
What happens if you drink salt water? Probably bad for you long term. Not going to kill you, but like it's not going to do what water is supposed to do and probably may even like dehydrate you. I'm asking. I'm just kind of conjecturing.
It can be really, really bad for you and your health if you've got something already like hypertension or, you know, things that that sodium in your bloodstream could affect you, right? Elevated levels of any of that. It's not going to keep you all nice and thirsty.
It will kill you if it is your source of hydration.
If that's all you're getting, that's it. But I mean, if you drink a glass of salt water, you're probably going to be okay unless you have a major problem, right?
What's that line? And I forget who it's from. Water, water everywhere and not a drop to drink. And the idea of being like lost at sea, that would suck.
Yeah.
The irony would alone would kill you probably.
Yeah, that's a horrible situation. Okay, we've gone long enough here, guys. For more information, do just Google search the term salt water. That's one word, intrusion. And you can learn all about this. Okay, we'll be right back with more strange news.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with more strange news. This one comes from the often absurd, occasionally interesting world of high art, fine art, conceptual art. I think we're all art lovers here, but you know, a banana taped to a wall. I don't know how that qualifies as art. I mean, I guess it's an open conversation. Like, what is art? It's a conversation that's been happening for a long time. Many, many hundreds of years. One person's art is another person's flaming pile of garbage. We have seen stories, for example, of folks selling invisible works of art for thousands of dollars. I believe that was a recent thing where there were like these conceptual sculptures from an artist that were being, you know, sold for high amounts of money. And then, of course, you've got the whole NFT boom. There's another story that's top of mind that I'll just briefly mention. NFTs are now effectively worthless. So that art slash cash grab movement seems to have been deflated almost entirely.
That's horrible.
I know. Who knew? Who saw it coming? What we're talking about today is, can crime be art, gentlemen?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you always hear about the perfect crime or like the perfect heist. I guess there's some artistry to that, you know? But is it possible to, in an act of crime, encapsulate something that could be considered an artistic statement or a form of protest, perhaps? Well, the Danish artist seems to think so. A man by the name of, I think J is silent, a soft in Danish, Hanning, who was paid around $70,000 US or 532,549 Danish kroner, which has always been one of my favorite types of currency, just to pronounce the kroner. It just sounds very intense. And they instructed him with these funds to make a piece of artwork using cash, because I believe he had done this in the past. He had done sort of like a comment on the exploitation of workers using like making canvases covered in like collages made of cash. So they wanted him to do that again. And he, I think, was planning on doing that. But then he decided, you know what? I'll do you one better. I'm going to deliver you some giant empty canvases, and I'm going to take your money, and I'm going to spend it on stuff for myself.
And how'd it go?
That's the statement, really? Sorry.
That's the statement.
Sorry, Ben.
Yeah, yeah. No, the project, the work of art is titled Take the Money and Run, which is what Hanning did. It did not go well, despite the, you know, universal liberality of the Danes and their open-mindedness towards all manner of interesting interpretations of art. They did not take kindly to this, because apparently, you know, they had paid him to do a thing, you know, to do this job. They wanted him to recreate two of these earlier works. One was called An Average Austrian Year Income, which again is like a piece of art that involves notes of currency, like almost like laid out like a flag. Like from a distance, you might think it was like a Rauschenberg or something like that. It has, I don't know, it has an interesting quality. It's sort of like a Warhol where it's repetitive images, but it's literally just cash. And there's a couple of empty spaces on the bottom right. Again, could argue for or against that being a valuable work of art. And then another one called An Average Danish Annual Income, which very similarly featured bills. This one's larger, but again, it's all the aligned bills and then a kind of an empty column at the bottom. So I don't know why. It's literally apparently the number that is the average Danish income and the average Austrian income displayed visually. So you can kind of get a sense of it. I don't quite get the message, though, because to me, maybe I'm not European, so I don't know the value of these bills. But if I'm looking at it, it seems like a lot, but I guess it's not, because I'm looking at it all in one place. Maybe that's the point. But I also think that in general, isn't basic income better in Austria and Denmark? Certainly than it is in the United States. Seems like things are generally a little more equitable over there, but got to have something to protest. So that's what they were expecting. That's what they had paid for. He decided, though, I love this. He has this to say. I saw from my artistic point of view that I could create a much better piece for them than what they could possibly imagine. I have created an art piece which is maybe 10 or 100 times better than what we had planned on. What is the problem? What is the problem indeed? So the museum is suing him to get back that money that they paid him. His whole point, though, by the way, was that the spending of the money was itself the work of art.
Sure. It has an observer. The definition of art is something with an observer.
That's right.
And appreciation. And Noel, could you tell our fellow conspiracy realist the extent of what he turned in for those U.S. equivalent 70 grand? Like, how did he turn in a bunch of blank canvases?
Two.
Two.
Okay, well, that's quite, more than one.
Quite large. It's true. Two quite large, empty, framed canvases. And, you know, first of all, I want to say, frames are expensive.
Sure.
So you think they would have given him a little credit for just the framing job? It's a pretty nice, bespoke-looking frame.
Arguably, the whole thing's a frame job.
Well, well put, Ben. But I don't know if you've ever been to like even like Michael's or something to try to get something professionally framed. It can be quite expensive. You pay $500, but pay more for the frame than you do for the work of art, which is definitely what's going on here, because contained within that canvas is absolutely nothing. Ben, I believe you referred to this as a tabula rosa type situation. Absolute blank canvas, nothing to it. So they're very upset. They did display the art briefly. It's not really clear why they took it down. It says here in this article from the Smithsonian that the museum is called the Kunsten Museum of Modern Art in Denmark. Kunst being a German and Danish word for art. Seems kind of redundant. It's the Art Museum of Modern Art. It's kind of funny. But yeah, they did display it for a bit. It says here they put it out under an exhibition titled "Take the Money and Run." But it says when they did it like a normal show. Like I guess you would typically do an opening and then the show would stick around for a while. Usually, you know, a couple of months. But that, it's not clear quite how long it ran. It says, but when the show ended, and he made it clear he was not going to return the money, they did file a lawsuit for. I guess it's a breach of contract. He puts it this way when he spoke to the reporters for the Smithsonian. It's not theft. It's a breach of contract. And breach of contract is part of the work.
Tight.
And, yeah, the court did give him a little bit of a credit, $6,000, which they referred to as compensation for the time the gallery displayed as his work. But they have ruled. And I believe he is going to appeal. There's a 4-week appeal period window. And as long as the case is still up for potential appeal, the art museum does the representative for the art museum does not plan on commenting further.
Okay. So that can be the legal proceedings can become part of the canvas, right? Part of the art. That would
you could
be
argue
the idea.
All of that. Yeah. That's a really good point. Maybe this is all in his design and his master plan. He even said, like, I just spent the money on, like, groceries and stuff, you know? And like, you know, he said nothing extravagant. Let's see. Yeah, he said, I will go so far as to say the piece is that I have taken the money. The two empty frames are actually a representation of the concept. So more important than the absence of money is that I've taken the money. This guy's ballsy, man. I kind of love it. I kind of hate it. I kind of think it's genius. I kind of think it's idiotic. I'm clearly very much on the fence about this. What do you guys think? Is this art? Is this commenting on something of value? It's creating a conversation.
What do you think, Matt?
I'm fascinated by this.
Okay, so I need to know in the artist's original things that were going to be recreated for this fee, right? We were talking about it's actually looking at the
That's
money.
That's what the money was for.
Yeah.
They gave him the money to put it on. I'm just now clocking that. You're right, Matt. Sorry.
Well, but this is what I don't fully understand. They gave him a lot of money.
Sure.
You know, when you think about physically the bills and that would actually go on there, it was a pretty huge number, right? 500 something thousand.
532,549 Danish kroner.
Yeah. As a material, as like a medium.
I don't know
physical
what the denominations of kroner are either. So, you know.
But still, like, that seems like a lot of it sounds like a lot of stuff that you could use to create a thing. Sounds very intricate to me. Sounds like a lot of work. Sounds like, you know, all this stuff. It does feel like what did he say his statement was? What matters is that I took the money.
Yes.
Right.
So there's something to that when it comes to either taxes and fees that Danish workers have to pay when they make their, what is it? I think it's a average $45,481 per month before taxes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but then somebody just takes your money. It's, of course, the state, it's the government that takes quite a bit of that money. So in a way, like maybe if it's a statement on taxes, I think you could swing it is what I'm saying.
I will also defend the, I will defend the philosophical position of the artist. Furthermore, this is a very clever way to create, again, a continued conversation, which is all art is in the human experience. It's going to be interesting. I love the point about the coupons of currency as a physical medium, right? Like if someone collected a montage of leaves, that's sort of the same thing. There's just a value assigned to these specific pieces of linen and paper. The idea, to Noel's point, the idea that there would be, this would be part and parcel of a participatory artistic exhibit ongoing, right? Some sort of performance art. Perhaps it was, and not to sound too Ocean's 11 or too conspiratorial about it, perhaps this stuff getting pulled out from the museum, perhaps that was the goal all along. To be completely fair, I am of the mind that the museum probably put this up and got mocked, got bad press, and so took it down, unless there's somewhere in that RFP or somewhere in that grant proposal, there's something where they said, we'll put it up and then we'll manufacture a controversy about it. I don't know. I'm of two minds. What do you guys think?
I'm with you. I do think that, like, the extension of the work is all of this coverage, is the potential fallout, is the court case, and whatever precedent it might set.
Oh, I thought you were going to say whatever groceries he got.
Yeah, whatever groceries he got. Maybe he could tape them to the wall, and that could be his next exhibition, you know? I'm not trying to be a dick. I get that, like, the high concept art is interesting and sort of, like, in some ways can be iconoclastic or, like, you know, punk rock, but kind of a little overkill to me. Like, a lot of the stuff that you'll see at Art Basel or, you know, some of these super high-endy kind of art events, sometimes it's just bullshit. You know, I mean, in my opinion, and, like, you know, my kid and I went to the Detroit Institute of Art recently, and so much of the work in there is just beyond incredible. And then you'll have occasional works that, you know, just kind of like big splatters of block color and stuff. And I've never personally gotten those, you know, without some sort of like artist statement or historical context. A lot of times those things just kind of fall a little flat for me. And they are the kinds of things that one might say, well, I could have done that. Anyone could have done that. And then the response is, well, did you? No, you didn't. So I get that argument as well.
Oh, I heard a similar conversation in the Prado in Madrid, looking at some Picasso work. There was this older guy who was like, I could have done that. And there was this kid who was maybe 7 or 8, clearly not the adult's child, who said, yeah, but you didn't and you won't.
It's true. And, you know, and a lot of these folks that, like Picasso, for example, classically trained painter. He created an aesthetic that was very much by choice. It's not like he drew like a kindergartner because that's all he could do. I'm joking. I think Picasso's work is incredible. I love it. It's moving, the forms, the energy that it captures. I'm a huge fan. But it is a choice and an aesthetic style. And oftentimes those types of artists, you know, can do like photorealistic painting. They're trained in all of that stuff. To me,
sure, it's a visual voice.
Yeah, it is. And to me, a lot of times stuff that falls squarely in the camp of performance art, I think it can be really meaningful and moving and interesting, but I think it also can be really pretentious and obnoxious. And jury's still out.
Do you find those mutually exclusive?
No, that's a good point, Ben. No, they are not mutually exclusive. But sometimes things can be gallingly pretentious to the point where you're just like, this is offensive to me, you know, that you would expect me to pay for this, you know, to view it or to give it my time. A lot of cool stuff to look at. But again, I need to think about this one. It's an interesting story. But I think if you guys don't have anything to add, we could take a quick break, hear a word from our sponsor, then come back with one more piece of strange news.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Snag a Job is where America goes to hire, with the deepest talent pool in hourly hiring. With access to over 6 million active hourly workers, Snagajob is the all-in-one solution for hiring high-quality employees who can cover all your needs. On-demand, temp to hire, part-time or full-time. You name the position. Warehouse worker, retail associate, grocery store clerk, fitness trainer, baker, stylist, bellhop, podcast producer. Yeah, Snagajob's got a worker for that. With our easy-to-use platform, you're able to seamlessly post and fill available positions quickly with a dedicated customer support team to provide all the help you need along the way. Kind of nice knowing you have a talent pool like that in your own backyard, right? Snagajob is the partner you need to keep your business running smoothly. So visit snagajob.com or text snag to 242424 to talk to an expert. Snagajob.com, where America goes to hire.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision?
Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all.
Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel.
Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI.
There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI and revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better.
In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces.
So tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow.
Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we have returned one last piece of strange news amid all the other very strange things that are occurring today. Some neo-Nazis got arrested in a massive raid in Germany. That's where our next and final story takes us. These neo-Nazis are part of an occult organization, not dissimilar, Matt, to the Ananib. How do we say it?
I think we said Ananib.
Ananib.
Yeah. Ananib.
Is that it, Noel?
Yeah.
It is. Yeah.
Former young German boy.
I love Francis Montreux.
So this group, let's play the reindeer games here. Artgemeinschaft. How do we do the G's, Noel?
That's it. That was it. Artgemeinschaft. Oh, yeah, you nailed it. Absolutely.
Thanks.
Could have put a little more stank on it, but you
thank you. Well, Doc, can I get an applause cue anyway? I need it. Yeah, I'm at the edge. But the German police force carried out a massive raid on this network. And this network is a private group. But this raid went across the entire country. It is a far-right group that the German government and the various European press agencies, including The Guardian, describe as a, quote, cult-like, deeply racist and anti-Semitic association. And the reason they finally got popped is that they sought to indoctrinate children with Nazi ideology. Now, of course, fellow conspiracy realists, we don't want to ever sound like we're being willfully ignorant. We don't want to ever sound like we are talking down to anybody. But if you are listening to this podcast in English, then you know why Germany is a little bit sensitive about the anti-Semitic Nazi stuff.
Yeah, if you've ever been to a German museum, many of them are founded by, you know, famously anti-Semitic folks, and they do a really good job of owning that history, you know, in the plaques and you know, placards throughout these types of places on the Museum Island in Berlin in particular, but, you know, all over the country. There's a word for it, too. I think if we're getting into fun German words, there is a word for the collective grief and guilt over Nazism in Germany, and it is called Gewangenheitsbewältigung. It just refers to a collective looking back and acknowledgement of the past, specifically in terms of what you're talking about.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And thank you again there. You know, the this was a, maybe not necessarily unprecedented, but it was a phenomenal use of German law enforcement. So German officers stormed 26 apartments belonging to 40 different members of this network. And they're in 12 different German states, all the hits, Bavaria, Brandenburg. The association is, you'll hear a couple different things depending on the news sources. BBC Global News did a piece about it, and they said there were around 300 members. The association, per The Guardian, has around 150 members, but these are all interlinked. They're all Venn diagrams of far-right organizations of one sort or another.
Wow. It's weird for me because 26 homes belonging to 39 members, even if it's across 12 states, doesn't sound like that much of a blow to a movement unless, you know, there are really 150 members in total, right? But I'm
150 to 300, right?
Okay. Got you.
Depending on how many children they have brainwashed at the time of recording.
Which is really the danger, right? If a child is never able to escape that lens, as we were talking about the other day, Ben, like, because the idea, an ideology like that taught to you by parents or adults in your life is something that later can be changed or removed, but that takes time and almost like
reprocessing almost, right?
Yeah. What is that term? Deprogramming?
Deprogramming is the word. I said reprocessing. Yeah, deprogramming.
Both are correct. You know, this is a descendant of some of the ultimate aims of the World War II era Nazi regime. They would function in ostensible step with Christianity, but the idea was to ultimately replace that religious structure, right? That mental paradigm, and replace it with something that was, you know, let's be honest, a little less Jewish in their eyes, something a little more what you would call neo-pagan or theosophic. These guys are nasty, nasty business. They have been linked with ideologies. It's kind of like how most people who ride motorcycles are not outlaw bikers, but the small amount of bikers who are outlaw bikers are super dangerous.
Right.
I feel silly and uninformed even saying this, but I don't know how closely someone promoting the Nazi ideology, if you put that in quotes, how closely tied that is to nationalism, right?
It's very closely tied. And that's a great direction for us to take. You are right in that it's kind of like, not all puzzles are mazes, but all mazes are puzzles inherently. So there are far right groups operative in Germany that are not going to self-describe as Nazis, but they will agree with a lot of the things. You know what I mean? It's right wing extremism, and such may create strange bedfellows, especially given Germany's current negotiations, navigation around immigration. Sorry, I'm accidentally freestyling there, but but there's also a long-held, pretty strict state position in Germany, which says that if you are a private organization, you have a right to exist. If you are not threatening other people, if you're not doing that stuff that happens with end of times cults where you say, hey, you know, let's all drink the Flavor-Aid on, you know, insert date here, then you should be fine to go. However, understandably, the nation state of Germany is pretty sensitive to the rise of extremism, fascism, and of course, neo-Nazi behavior. I don't know. Like that's where we get to our earlier conversation about whether any books should be banned. I may be painting with a broad brush, but I'll be honest, given strong precedent, I would rather Mein Kampf not be legal reading in Germany. I don't know. What I'm saying is this group has been accused by the German government of using a pseudo-religious, neo-pagan, ostensible belief in God to spread a worldview that advocates against anyone who is not born in the appropriate demographic.
It's interesting because, I mean,
dangerous.
You could say that about certain forms of extremist religions, others that exist, you know, like jihadi kind of followers, you know, folks that maybe you're wanting to wage a holy war, you know.
I don't know, anyone, though, because anyone can convert to Islam, technically.
That's true. I guess what I'm just trying to be devil's advocate here in terms of, like, at what point is an ideology inherently toxic and evil, you know, and at what point does it require, like, we've got to take action by removing the ability for certain literature to exist? It's a slippery slope. It's just, I don't know the answer. I'm thinking out loud. I think it's a fascinating point.
There's a thing that this group wrote called Confession of Species, in which it enumerates the, quote, guiding principles. They say there is a struggle that is naturally necessary for all becoming, being, and passing away. And instead of the term race, they use the term species or the term art. It's bad medicine. Part of the reason their membership is so small is only northern-born people may become members. And a lot of, like any, it's like an investment board. You know, when you look at that network, any members of this group tend to also be members concurrently with other far-right groups or neo-fascists. I think they call it the new right is how it would translate in English. But it's, guys, it's so unusual for the German police to carry out a raid of this magnitude. And Matt, to your point, it sounds like a very small amount of people, but I would argue, especially given the rise in right-wing identification in the nation state of Germany, I would argue this is setting an example. This is putting the spooky in the bones of a couple of other people who might have been planning some other things. I'm just going to be completely honest on that regard.
Well, it sounds like Germany has been banning several of these groups. What did you mention the other one, Ben? Hammerskin? I don't know how to say it.
Oh, Rammstein. Yeah.
No.
Du Hast went moth. Sorry. No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Tell us a little bit about this other group that was banned.
Well, I'm not really sure. You linked an Al Jazeera article in our doc here. And sure. At the very end, it states that as this was being written on September 27th, today, they said last week Germany, quote, outlawed the local chapter of the U.S.-based, it looks like Hammerskins, Hammerskins, a neo-Nazi group known for its white supremacist rock concerts. And then, just in tracking down some more information on the art one that we're talking about, there's several, like, it's interlocking organizations or organizations that have connective tissues to them, like several others. One that's roughly translated to family association.
Sure. Yeah.
Seems like there. But I guess my whole point of this is that it seems like Germany is taking steps to at least officially ban these groups and then actually stop some of the prominent members.
Yes. Up to and including a little bit of pre-crime, if we're being honest, because there is a long history of powers to the east using those groups, which again are private entities, using those groups as a means of asymmetric conversation, you could call it. I don't want to call it warfare, but it's an easy way to get inside things. And Germany may be cracking down on these because they finally said, hey, we don't like neo-Nazis. However, I advanced to all of us listening today that there were actionable, concrete operations that they were nipping off at the bud. And whatever it was or would have been was of significance enough that they went ahead and bucked on their own laws as a nation. There's a, I don't know if it's a greater good argument or if it's a not again, not here argument, because they don't have school shootings at near the frequency of the United States.
That's right. And that's true. And it does make you think, is our freedom of speech, like, does it come at what cost? You know what I mean? Like, because you could argue that this kind of stuff is sort of a clamp down on freedom of speech. But it seems to be a well-meaning one, dare I say, a necessary one. And we just, I think, you know, in the same way that so many constitutional kind of purists just believe that they have to follow the letter of the Constitution and stuff, it is what leads to things like gun violence. It is what leads to a lot of, like, very preventable deaths. And to your point, school shootings, and you know, it's so difficult to actually officially shut something down as hate speech because it has to be actionable. And in the same way that you can't say this guy's gonna do a crime, police go get him, that doesn't work. They got to wait till the person's already killed the person. I don't know. It makes you think in terms of, like, at what cost is our quote unquote freedom of speech?
Mm-hmm. To sew this up, which there may well be an episode in this story, to sew it up, in addition to the raids, the federal government of Germany has banned the existence of this organization in particular, as well as the many subgroups with which it is attached. At least the ones that we know of. Now, the question that people in the halls of power are asking themselves over in Germany is, who is a member, right? Who did they not catch? And what are those people capable of doing if they continue to function as though they support the society in which they live? These are questions for another day. There is much, much more strange news on the way. We can't thank you enough, Conspiracy Realists, but we will try. Thank you. And we hope that you will join us in our continuing pursuit of all the stuff they don't want you to know. Hey, how can I join up? You might be asking yourself. Well, we want to make it as easy as pie. All you have to do is wait for an eclipse. No, I'm kidding. We're all over the place. We're on social media and stuff.
Oh, I like your thinking there, Ben. No, that could be fun. We should go back to the old ways of communicating, like sending up smoke signals or just giant signal fires, you know, light the torches and all of that. But no, for the time being, you can find this at the Handle Conspiracy stuff on Ixnay on the Itertway, and Facebook and YouTube. Conspiracy Stuff Show on Instagram and TikTok.
Hey, do you like to use your phone to call people? Well, you can call us. Our number is 1-833-STDWYTK. It's pretty cool. You just say whatever nickname you want to give yourself, and then you've got 3 minutes, and you really get as much information in there as you can before it goes beep. And once it does, if you've got more to send us, why not instead try an email? We are
conspiracy@iHeartRadio.com.
Stuff They Don't Want You to Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. actually a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited
by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of home ownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.